following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
It's the Stone Cold and Jackal Show.
Really? That's what you came up with for our intro?
Hey, buddy, how are you?
That's amazing.
Yeah, you like that one?
That was almost kind of a Scooby-Doo.
I know that I feel like we've.
I feel like I said that.
Stevie B. We've done that before.
Yeah, so maybe we should start over.
Yeah. Oh, Stevie B.
Okay, that's good.
That's good. You like that?
Yeah,
one?
I like that better. Like I don't have an 80s song for you to sing today either.
I don't need to be prompted to sing 80s songs, but.
Well, I know because, you know, I still listen to after doing Port Chuck for so long. You know,
are we venturing into pathetic territory where all we do is reminisce about that time we had a band? Hey, dude, remember that time we had a band?
I know.
Remember when we felt cool?
But it was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
I mean, I know. Here's two idiots saying how cool their band was. They're now
their cover band.
Now they're defunct.
Their defunct cover band.
Cover band.
Yeah.
But we had a good run.
We did. We had a good time. For ourselves, it was a great time.
We sold out the Wilbur Theater almost.
Almost.
No, I think we were like 50 away.
Yeah,
there's 1,000
yeah.
seats in there, and we are 900 plus tickets.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah. Hey, Rick Springfield, have you ever sold 900 tickets to a concert? Call us when you have.
Yeah, he's sold like 20 million albums. He's so dumb. I know. But in our own simple, pathetic world,
yes,
we were rock stars for...
In our minds?
No, for 5 years.
Well, I miss is right before we would go on tour, I'd go shopping with my wife, and we'd go to Forever 21 Men and get...
No such thing.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not.
There is.
Forever 21 Men?
Correct. Oh, it's the best.
Believe it.
It's the best store because it's that stuff that you're like, oh, if you're at a nice store, you're like, oh,
Oh, wait, so this was your attempt of dressing like a rock star?
Correct. So it would be those kind of things that you're like, oh, I wonder if I can pull that off. But if you're in a rock band, you can because you're in a band.
So what was
but
it?
But then it's not expensive, so expensive that you're like, oh, I shouldn't buy this because I'll only wear it when I'm on stage because if I don't wear it on stage, I'll feel like a douchebag.
So what was it? A different, like a vest with a patch on it or something?
I got my pleather jacket that I wore all the time.
Okay.
That was maybe a little too tight.
Yeah.
It was members only, member of one.
Member of one should only be in here.
Yeah.
Not Bradford.
So that's what I miss. I miss the shopping sprees with my wife.
Wow. It's interesting what
the
guy who only sang misses.
Yes.
Because that's pretty much all you did.
That's all I did. Oh, because you organized everything? Is that what you mean? You did all the work and I just said
no, I had to go shopping for the whole bus.
Oh, that's right. I bought the cleaning supplies.
So when we would
actually
leave,
shopped
like
for the
bus would pull up
yeah.
and then I'd go into the grocery store and spend $1,300 on groceries.
Well, because you had
for
to get
13
that, like,
guys.
When you buy organic snacks for 13 people. Like,
well, there's
a little...
few organics.
Yeah.
You liked them.
Well, great thing about Andy, our lead guitarist, he just drank Coca-Cola and Ho-Hos. That was like his diet.
Pretty much. And Red Bull. That was it. I swear to God, it was it.
I've never seen anybody drink that much cola.
I'm surprised he's still with us.
Yes. Hi, Andy.
Is Andy around? Andy! Dickie was our drummer. He was, you know, he was organic. Like, this dude walked, and he just loved health.
Yes.
Right?
I learned a lot about healthy eating from Dickie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Dickie. Miss you, buddy.
I know.
All right.
So, anyway, should we get over our pathetic reminiscing? Which brings me back to,
what?
I always hear songs on,
because,
you know, my son, he puts 80s on 8. That's all he does. 80s, every time we get in
what
the car.
What a great kid.
I know. He's amazing. And we were listening to Rat and stuff yesterday. I'm like, I'm listening to Rat with my kid. He's like, Dad, who's Rat? What's the lead singer? How many albums did they sell?
Oh, he knows all the questions.
So, but I always listen to songs for you to sing, right? Because I'm still kind of trained.
In that mindset,
oh, Bradford.
I have a note thing on my iPhone that's all songs that I should sing.
I have it.
And you have a note thing that's all songs that I should sing?
100%. Yes, I do.
Awesome.
I should make you sing like three of them right now.
It's funny. I'm in stores and all of a sudden. sudden, I'll hear a song, and I'm like, why did I never sing that for poor Chuck? It was like, which one are you pulling up your little song list? Let's see if there's.
I know, we're so rude right now to our guest.
I know, we have a guest in here, and he's so excited about our stupid band.
And he's asleep.
Sleeping
right now.
Heaven by Brian Adams.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a good ballad. I was thinking Heat of the Moment.
Love it.
Yep.
Asia.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Heat of the Moment. So stupid.
I'm just trying to pretend.
Ooh, that's a good.
I'm going to agree to anything you say, Steve.
I wrote down Heat of the Moment twice, and one of them says Heat of the Moment.
Because the first Asia. One is the first one. You were drunk, and the second one.
How come we never did?
You were drunk.
How come we never did Huey Lewis songs? That would have been great.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I like Huey Lewis, but that's really not it. That's not our vibe.
Okay. All right. So, speaking of vibes, our guest is a nice vibe.
He does. I'm throwing my phone down.
Yeah, let's get off of this train.
Why? It's a train to nowhere?
Yeah.
It's like Commuter with Liam Neeson.
So he's a fairly new addition to our show, and he's got gray hair. And
that's amazing.
And
he does have
He's been on other
shows. He does have, honestly, for a guy, I have good hair.
Yeah.
I have good hair through my years of hairdom.
Through your years.
And he has amazing hair.
Yeah, well, because...
But I'm sure that's not what he wants
to talk about. Well, there's something flowy about it, but there's a shape to it that no matter how flowy it looks... See, when I've had longer hair and it's been flowy-ish, in my eye, it always gets out of sorts. So I'm curious to talk to this gentleman about...
No, you're not.
Does he get finicky? Does he get finicky about when it's flowy?
You cut your own hair.
I used to.
This guy doesn't cut his own hair, and obviously,
not.
It looks like he doesn't.
Right.
Okay. Yours did.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
So, don't even ask him that.
I'm going to ask him about it.
No, you're not.
Wes Ramsey is with
Wes
us.
Wes Ramsey. Man, I've been trying to track this guy down. This is like finding freaking Bigfoot.
Well,
and he is Bigfoot, by the way, because he's like 6'8".
Did you look in the cabin?
Listen, this guy in the cabin.
Dude.
It's unbelievable.
You made a joke the other day, and Wes, you can speak to this. I don't know how fast you can grow facial hair.
I made a joke. I said, I was in the Russian clinic for 5 years, and I didn't have any freaking hair growth. This guy's in the cabin for a week. He looks like freaking ZZ Top. Like, I mean, what? First of all, it was more than a week.
How long were you in that cabin?
Well, the storyline was several months. And I think
in real time?
I think it was also several months.
Yeah, every time I went up. Because you come in on the stage, and then, you know, the cabin was right there.
Yeah.
And I would just see poor Wes is tied to the bed.
So, okay, question.
What's your name? What's your name?
Kathleen.
Obrecht.
Yeah, yes. Obrecht. So, okay. So your arms were – how tightly were you, like, tied down?
I liked it when it was taut. When they would tie it tight,
so
I would
theory,
say tie it tighter. And
so
then,
don't
in
use
theory,
the word. Don't
were
use
you just
the word
laying,
taut.
Were you just
taut?
Especially around Sonny, you won't know what you're talking about.
So if we were to translate this to real life, would you just be laying in a pool of pee and poo?
I suppose so. I suppose so. A lot of fans online were asking about that. I didn't really have a definitive answer.
Right, because they weren't like saying, you know,
hey, take a five.
Leading you to the bathroom. Right.
No, and I was so drugged and so, out of my mind and pain and whatnot, blacking in and out, that I couldn't think that they could even carry me outside or, you know.
Sure.
Want to look after
well,
me.
Well, hold on.
She was a doctor, right? Obrecht's a doctor. Maybe she catheterized
this is, hold
you?
Hold on. This is, and we're going to talk, Wes, about more. Important things.
Nope.
But the best was the freaking thing Laura sent me that when
you guys did a trio hug to the ground.
Poor Michael Easton was carrying you.
And then back. And then Jason Patrick Stewart, like
it's
you
not
guys
Jason
all,
Patrick Stewart.
James Patrick
JPS?
Stewart.
James Patrick.
With JPS, then like you guys all like did a back to back to back spoon to the ground.
Dude,
JPS jumped on our spoon, and we had a triple spoon
to
the grass.
So I didn't see the end of the scene because
so
they cut
like,
out.
You became like measuring spoons.
Totally. Three measuring spoons.
Who was freaking the tablespoon?
I was
McBain,
Peter August Heinrich Jr., and then freaking Valentine, whatever his name is.
Valentine.
So
yes.
okay.
Poor JPS. We've been messing up his name.
Finn is carrying Peter on his back out of the burning cabin.
And Michael's so funny.
There's a log that's on fire, and he has to lower down to get through the doorway, and he has to lower down, and the one take we do, he doesn't lower down far enough. So you just see my head crack against this big log, and you can hear it.
Oh, my gosh.
And Laura goes, did you just hit your head? She rewinds it. I said, yeah, that really happened. And then on the way through the grass, Finn falls down with Peter on his back, but Valentin decides to run over and join in.
Yeah, how do you join in? Was he trying to brace you from falling?
He was trying to help, and he ended up, and they cut away right at the moment. He just laid down right behind me. And snuggled himself in.
It's the funniest.
It happens in slow motion.
I cried.
It's the weirdest thing.
I cried watching it. I watched the thing 100 times, and I was like, "How? I want to know how this happened. Like, what was the end result? Like, they were all three laying on the ground, and they were like, cut. Good job, guys.
You nailed it.
The fact that it made it into the air show and they didn't cut around that was priceless to me. Oh, Laura and I watch it all the time. We still
so that was the end of your big escape was you're spooning with two men on the grass.
Yes,
Can I make that into a GIF? A GIF? Is it a GIF or a GIF?
Both.
That's a good question.
GIF? GIF?
No, no.
Jiffy, Giffy. So you came on the show as – we can get into your background, but you came on as Peter August.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
And it was interesting because you were holding my character in Russia for 5 years, and we still don't know what you did to me.
Right.
If there was anything romantically involved or...
Right. Right.
No, but we don't know...
Our true backstory.
We don't really have... Did anyone ever tell you?
No. Not yet.
Not yet. It's too late.
Yes. Right. Exactly. I still go home and journal about what my backstory might have been.
But so nobody told you pretty much anything anyway.
Correct. I had no idea that it was my goons that were chasing you through Port Charles I was becoming the COO of Aurora Media. I have no idea that...
I know. We were trying to piece stuff together, you and I, when we were doing scenes.
When you jumped through the skylight, I had no idea that had to do with people I had sent after. No idea.
That's not right.
I was told it was so top secret that they didn't want to have
trust.
Me.
Well, they didn't trust you, basically. Yeah.
Well, listen.
Either that or they just didn't know.
Yes. Well, that's true.
That could be true, too. But if you tell anybody anything in this building, it's out.
Right.
Like,
right.
If it's even just – it's out.
Right.
One person knows, the whole – everybody knows.
I remember a bunch of years ago, we had something called the text message killer. And I think their plan A – for who it was going to be got changed. So there was a killer still killing people and nobody knew I don't think it had been decided who it.
Yeah, then they figured out
who
it was.
And then and everybody kind of knew that. They're like, oh crap, who are they going to make the killer? Because then that character will probably
whose contract's coming up.
Right. But then they decided on nobody. So they brought a guy that had been killed. They brought Diego back and made him the text message killer. So it's
but
funny.
I think they've always had it that he was going to be Heinrich.
I think so.
Right.
From what you know.
Yes. After the fact, yes.
Unfortunately, we're in the day and age of things go so fast that it's hard to get backstory.
Yeah.
Because I would have loved to know, just in their heads, hey, what happened to Jason for those 5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, was he just sitting in a wheelchair?
Right.
Or did we have interactions?
Right.
You know,
was I spoon-feeding you soup?
Were you spooning me?
Were
you spooning me? So, you know, it was like, then we're trying to figure it out on the fly. It's like, do I hate this guy?
Or was I even
sort
with
of?
You?
Did you take me? Yeah. And then we kind of figured out, you were kind of working against your dad.
Yes.
You know, and then things started to kind of fall into place.
Yes.
But it was weird because... For you, I didn't want to say I felt bad, but it was like he didn't have any direction,
right?
Like on where to go.
Well, and also,
right?
Like,
he's doing all this stuff now. It's like, why did you do all this stuff, even though you're going against your dad, which makes sense, and you're sympathetic, but you're still doing these bad things, and it was just like it's hard to
have a point of
balance
view.
And a point of view when you really don't have any information, you know?
Right.
So anyway.
Complicated.
But
complicated.
But it's out, obviously.
Yes.
And apparently you're very good at delivering babies on the roadside.
Yeah, well done. Well done, you. So are you like, now that it's been revealed, are you just like normal Peter in Port Charles now? Like, or is how much of your story is related to the fact that you're Heinrich Faison versus, or are you just running a magazine now?
I feel like the writers did a good job of trying to allow Peter to leave Heinrich in his past while he was reinventing himself in Port Charles and trying to live a good, upstanding, moral life.
Are most people allowing? Because does everybody know?
At this point, everybody knows.
Right.
And the bad things that were done, I feel like, you know, I have people that remind me that there are other characters in the show that have done some bad things and that it's possible to, you know, be redeemed and whatnot. And I think the more time goes by, the more, you know, connection you have, you know, to the characters in Port Charles, the easier it becomes maybe to find how to play the sympathy card for, you know, maybe this person isn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
Even though he's been subjected to doing bad things to good people over the years.
Right. Yeah. There's no clean soap characters.
Yeah, there's not. Right. And the fact that
no, he's pretty clean.
Yeah, so far. And the fact that Anna Finola is your mom.
Yeah. That's yeah.
Yeah. So how did that whole? I mean, I just know from the scenes that I did with her and Tristan. So, because I'm not, I should be more of a historian of the show, I guess.
Well, you've been on it for practically the whole run of
I want to die today. You're so stupid. Now I'm going to get a friend. I'm going to get a tweet that you called him stupid again. Not very nice.
Well, I called
you
him.
You shouldn't berate him. And I don't know how she spelled that.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't say that stuff to him on air. Take him off air and just say it to him nicely.
No one ever criticizes me for calling you old, though. I've never got.
I'm not.
Well, you're stating fact.
And truthfully, we're not. Mm. We're far apart in age, but we don't look that far apart.
We're not that far apart in age.
10 years almost.
Yeah.
Are we on the radio right now, or do you guys pre-tape this and then air it later?
This is not live.
Yeah. No, it's funny because we did it with Ken Schreiner,
and
he thought it was live, and we probably should have told you that it's not live,
because
it's not.
Right. In case you need to edit it?
He edits everything.
Yeah,
this guy.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
in case someone needs to edit the STUP ID word?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. The Jackal edits too. Huh, go figure.
Mostly in my favor.
Yeah. Apparently, it is in your favor.
You guys are hilarious.
So anyway.
This is my first podcast, so thank you guys for bringing
this
me
is
on.
Your oh, that's
yeah,
cool,
it's
man.
First time I've ever done
it. It's our first
before.
One, too.
Really cool.
If you couldn't tell.
No, you guys are naturals.
natural somethings. We're not sure yet. So how did that whole thing go down with –
Well, the Finola stuff was
with Finola.
You know, the character of Anna's been on so long, and Robin, and to figure out that you could be, you know, tied into that family lineage was exciting,
amazing, right?
For me.
Oh yeah,
well, yeah. Because then I thought, you know, as beautiful Laura is so prone to remind me, she
does
says,
she make her? Does she make you call her that?
Was that a good? Was a good moniker.
Yeah, thank you.
Beautiful Laura.
It's sort of by default programming. Just kinda, you know,
beautiful
comes out
Laura.
That way all the time.
That's good.
Everybody knows you guys are together.
Yes,
so that's not a secret.
And she would remind me. She'd say, you know, it's not just that you're Faison's son. You're also Anna's son. So that's the difference between the dark and the light. And you know, you have to remember that there can be good inside of you as well. Yeah. And you're not this, you know, evil, twisted man. You're also the son of – you have the genetic code of Anna. So you have plenty of room for wit and redemption and, you know, being smart and savvy and wonderful like Anna.
Yeah, you know, the hardest thing – I know I'm doing most of the talking.
I'm trying to ask a question.
Thank God.
I just don't
want to – All the other podcasts are 80-20.
I get in trouble for interrupting, so I'm trying to interrupt less these days.
No, you don't. You get in trouble?
I do.
From who's the first person you get in trouble from?
My wife.
Okay.
My
and
wife.
The second is me.
My wife.
My wife. Go ahead.
My question was, have you ever – where did Heinrich grow up?
Well, he was born in – well, in – that's a good question.
Thank you. see, I ask great questions. Well, because your dad
so is Danish.
Danish, yes. And your mom is British.
Yes.
So,
but he went to. He was immediately at a young age. Heinrich was shipped off to boarding schools, so he grew up in America.
In America, okay, that
yeah,
helps.
In American boarding schools.
So
and then would
they
go
never.
Back.
They you that you never was like, oh crap, I what. He might have learned how to speak great English, but what is his native tongue?
Oh, gosh. Don't do that to the
right.
poor guy.
No, I'm just curious because international parents.
He's
know.
From Kentucky. His native tongue is hillbilly. It's called Hilljack.
Heinrich was sent to a boarding school.
In Louisville.
Hazard County.
Wes is from Kentucky, yes.
I was born and raised in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Louisville. Swallow the end.
Careful.
So my best friend from high school, Scotty, I was his best man, and all of his group of friends from college and did bachelor party excursions like they did. And it was my turn to plan one. And I was like, they've already done Vegas. They've done deep sea fishing. Like, where could be a small city that we could go where with like cool things to do, where we could do things really well for not a whole lot of money? So I was like, let's go to Louisville and do the bourbon trail.
Oh, that's right. It's very, very popular these days.
So we stayed in the presidential suite of it was one of the hotels.
Yes,
downtown,
and we did the bourbon trail and I thought the bourbon trail would be like wine tasting where you just get to go and drink all the bourbon.
But
you have to do a tour. You have to do a historic tour, and then they give you a taste of like the cheapest stuff at the end.
At the end, you get like a quarter of a
you
shot
get, like, a
for
thimble.
A 2-hour tour.
You get a thimble, yeah. And I'm like, in order to get another thimble of bourbon, I got to do another 2-hour history
lesson. In some county next door. We have to take another drive
to learn more
another,
history,
to distillery,
which is it's cool, but it wasn't as wasn't.
That's a cool hotel though, right?
Yeah.
So what's weird is. My
the
dad,
Seelbach or the Brown?
Seelbach.
The Seelbach, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think that's what
my dad's friend owned the Seelbach in the 90s.
Wow.
He took it from being dilapidated to its prime, and then he ended up selling it. But Louisville's fun, man.
Yeah.
It's a cool town.
Yeah.
But anyway.
My older brother's prom was in the basement of the Seelbach.
Oh,
he was 2 years ahead of me,
So, what was it like growing up in Louisville? I mean, was it...
Creative.
Yeah,
fun.
Yeah. I know they have that great theater festival and stuff.
The Humana Festival.
Yeah.
American plays at Actors Theater of Louisville. Yeah, and I remember as a kid growing up there feeling really lucky when I was doing a lot of theater and became obsessed with it. And
that's so that started at a young age for you?
Yeah,
were your folks
12.
Involved in theater?
Yeah. No, but they were super supportive. They, when I told them this is what I wanted to do, they sent me to these classes, and I ended up joining a young program there for kids 8 to 18, Walden Theater, and we did plays year-round, like 6 full-scale productions a year. And we would take classes through the week, and we'd theater history, acting classes, and even a playwriting class on the weekends. So I gave up all my sports and was spending all my time obsessed with theater. And I remember during that time, Louisville 1 year raised $5 million for their Endowment for the Arts. And at that same time, that same year, Cincinnati, Ohio, a much bigger city just up the river, Cincinnati raised a much bigger city raised $5 million for their Endowment for the Arts. That same year, Louisville raised $15 million theirs. So it was a really great place to be young and discover that you had, a creative imagination and some talent to cultivate. And I felt really lucky that I had a supportive family there.
So how did you find it, or how did it find you when you were 12? What got you into it?
I did a 3-week summer session at this theater program because I had discovered after doing a little musical play at my school that I being given a big role in it that I had a lot of fun and everyone was responding and laughing and enjoying my ability to be comedic on stage and physical comedy and be kind of goofy and then make everyone respond, and I thought, well, maybe there's something here. And so the 3-week session ended up being incredibly powerful, and there was a lot of dramatic work we did. And I was a very young kid, but I discovered that summer, oh, this is real. It's not just making people laugh. Like, I'm frightening people at times with what I find naturally able to do at this young age. And then I became sort of obsessed with it. I joined that program that fall and enrolled in. They moved me right to the advanced class. I was the youngest kid in the advanced acting class. So at that time, I was being treated like, you were right to do this, you're right to be here. And the older actors were taking me under their wing, and they were being very kind to me and spending time with me, talking to me and teaching me. And I was learning a lot about acting at such a young age. and spending time with older creative actors.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 12 and some of my best friends were, you know, juniors in high school.
Yeah.
You know, not normal, but it was really cool.
That was great about doing theater as a kid is you hang around with like cool kids, like cool older kids. And it's very easy to be like, I just love being around these outgoing older kids.
Yeah.
And that are
inspiring.
That are free with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be free with them.
Sure.
So stupid. It always goes back to the,
no, but that's,
you're
that's
young
how,
in a theater group with the ladies. Ah, now you sound like an old man.
As a 15-year-old kid, I did. That's what got me into it, is doing summer stock in my small New England town with kids that were college age doing
that's
theater.
Right. You,
and I was like, they are the coolest kids I'd ever met.
Yep.
And man, like I want to be a part of that.
Yeah, it told me what books I should be reading. Turned me on to music,
right.
You know, bands and music I'd never heard before. And so I felt really, you know, like I was getting being taken to culture school.
Yeah,
you know, art
totally.
Culture school, not just the work itself.
And you have something in common with people. It's not often you can have something in common with somebody who's so much older than you.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
absolutely. Who wants to mentor you, especially at a young age? It's you couldn't do that anywhere else, really.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, be 12 and have a 30-year-old be like, hey, no, do this. Read this book, man. This is cool. Oh, this guy's cool.
Right.
You know,
and there's something about
and not freak your parents out.
Yeah,
yeah, right?
Totally.
Well, because then you doing classes and then I'm sure you're doing productions too. And when you're, as a kid, when you're part of a group, part of a team like that, you know, we talk about team sport, you know, like kids do team sports. You know, if you're a kid and part of a company of a show, and you're spending hours upon hours with this group of people, and it becomes kind of like your bubble family for that 3 months that you're doing it.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, being a part of something like that is intoxicating in a way, you know? And
like going away to camp.
Yeah.
The memories last a lifetime.
It's awesome until you have to get paid for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you think about it, the reason how excited you are talking about and passionate and how it just, like, your childhood was that, and you have all these awesome memories, and then it's like, okay, now go try to make a living at it.
Yeah.
Oops.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then it just kind of, it doesn't change, but it does in a way of changes, like, okay, this is...
The creative veil gets pulled back, and you discover, you have to discover
that
there's a business, and there's all this other stuff, and then that's part of the innocence is a bit lost, and you have to grow up and realize, oh, there's more responsibility to this than I, you know.
Yeah.
When did, you come out to L.A.? Or did you go to college?
My friends, my older friends were going off to theater schools, and they were sort of paving the way, and one went to NYU in New York, and I went to visit, you know, my friend there and discovered, oh, this is New York City. And so I just, you know, thought, well, I'd love to go study theater here one day. And was very fortunate to be accepted into the Juilliard School, the 29th group in the year 96. And spent 4 years there studying classical theater. And then right after that, 3 months after graduation, my very first job was on Guiding Light. Rob DeCina, casting director, Paul Rausch, executive producer, and, you know, playing Crystal Chappelle's little brother, Sam Spencer, on the show. That's and awesome. Laura Wright was there playing Cassie, Cassie. So I was, you know, then at my first job, learning about TV, learning about the camera, learning about
all different.
Was that experience with all those cool people in that great city?
Yeah,
so that was
for you, Wes. What was what was the biggest? Because if we've talked about it, if you're growing up doing theater, and that's how you're raised, and you don't really know TV, obviously we know as actors there shouldn't be a difference in the acting, right?
Yeah.
Someone says, "Oh, you're on a soap opera. I want to do soap acting." It's not different than movie acting or theater acting.
Yeah.
Theater's a little different because you are in front of a live audience and you always have to project.
Yeah.
And what was it like for you to all of a sudden be maybe bigger or grander?
Yeah.
And then have to be
right.
Come dial it down because there's the cameras. Now I'm just talking to my scene partner here, and I don't have to talk to the guy in the back row.
Yeah, exactly. People talk about daytime being a great training ground. It was a great transitional ground for me because it feels like the it bridges the gap between a proscenium of being on a theater. I mean, when I walk around the sets up here, it reminds me of theater stages, the way they're set up, and it's a great feeling. But, you know, if you're on location in a movie and – everything is, you know, you're doing things 20 times in a row and it's all just 2 seconds of something and it's, you know, everything's right in your face and it's so subtle. It's very different than the theater. But I feel like what we do, you can kind of have the best of all worlds in a way, because depending on the writing and depending on, you know, what it needs to be, sometimes you really got to go for it. You know, and they just move the boom further away.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And exactly. Then, yeah, and you can make it that spectacular. And really, you kind of go for it too, because we don't really have time to do 20 takes or even 5 takes. So it's not like we have that much time to figure it all out like you do in primetime or film. But I love that part of it, because it feels like you're rehearsing a play. It feels like you're shooting the rehearsals of a play, and you just keep the play going no matter what.
Well, and also, since we have multiple cameras on us at once, there may be one that's trying to get a close-up of us. But if you have the instinct to take a physical chance, like if you have a physical choice, chances are you're going to be on somebody's camera.
Someone's going to get it.
And they can go out to that. Yeah. They can go out to a wider shot if you are out of frame on your close-up. You know, like, and for a lot of the stuff that we used to do, like a lot of the physical comedy stuff that we kind of lucked into a lot of it, because some of it wasn't planned.
Yeah.
And so, like, some of it was just the moments that we'd have turning into something else. And I never ever did it enter into my head, oh gosh, I shouldn't do this because I might not be on camera. And we also don't have to match anything here, which is amazing.
Right.
Like, you never have to think about, oh gosh, when we film this from the other direction, I move my hand and reach for this cup at this moment. I have to do that, or it's not going to, like, you don't have
continuity
any of that
for
stuff.
Coverage.
And the thing I got to commend you on, Wes, because, you know, I saw how hard, first of all, you're an extremely hard worker, which is, you're always prepared, always hard working. Your work ethic is awesome.
Thanks.
And I don't know how you have time to do your hair.
I wake up like
this. It's beautiful. But I gotta give him credit, because I'm on the set. I'll be on the set, and he's doing these pretty highly emotional scenes. And usually, it's, hey, you know, with even casting directors, if you're going on an audition or if you're doing a job, a director will say, give us a little more, right? It's always trying to get someone from 5 to 10.
Sure.
And with Wes, he always went for it.
Yeah.
Which is very difficult as an actor, first of all,
to
go, hey, balls to the wall. I'm doing it. I'm going. Yep. Get ready.
Yeah.
Because we only have one or two takes here.
Right.
And obviously he knows that. He sees it. And Laura's probably told him 100 times.
Yeah.
Hey, you got one freaking take.
Right.
You might as well go for it. And if it sucks or you don't like it or they don't, then you can dial it down and bring it back in and get another shot at it.
Yeah.
But if you do something that's like not where you think it might be for the first take and you get it out, they're moving on.
Right.
And it could be a pretty pivotal scene or, you know, run of scenes that you want it to go a certain way.
It could end up being like a fraction of what it could have been maybe.
Right.
Yeah. But I always find if you really go for it, then you get that out of your system and it is easier to dial it down. And if they want that, then it can become powerfully concentrated, which can feel really good. I think it's more difficult when they want more and you haven't given more, because then I click into it's not enough, self-conscious nerves, whatever, and it gets to a different headspace of like, now I feel like I'm pushing to give them something, you know?
Yeah, I know, and you don't want to ever feel
especially
that.
Especially when you don't have a lot of time to rehearse or whatever, so you just want to kind of...
Or information. So, I mean, but, you know, for you to do that, that's tough, man. That's your theater training. I'm just going for it, and I can dial it back.
Right.
Because 99 out of 100 times, it's the other way.
Right. Yeah.
The director's coming out of the booth. Yeah. Okay, look, we need you to get a little more here and this and that. I see it with people, you know, newcomers all the time. And I don't know, man. I'd watch your stuff. I'm like, oh, this poor guy's just thrown into the fire, man. You're thrown into the fire, you know.
Literally.
And you handled it, and it's great. And
thanks,
you did a great job.
Thank you.
And
well, that's what the directors are there for. You know, they take good care of us, I think. They see more that's going on than we do. They know more about the story, the producers, the writers, the scripts, the people in the booth. So I always trust that, you know, if I'm out there going for it, doing the best I can with what I think instinctively, then they're going to protect me. They're going to direct me. They're going to give me the notes
hopefully
I need. And if I can adjust, then they'll help all of us not look like, you know, idiots.
You know, I think, you know, and that's a good point, because people don't really understand the difference between directors. Like movie directors run the ship.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sitcom directors, it's half and half, writers,
showrunner,
director, showrunner. Yeah. Here, the director is, you know, doesn't have the most power here.
Right.
You know, in daytime.
Right.
They're there to facilitate, to get the shots in a quick manner.
But we've got these great producers in the booth that can be giving the notes to the directors who are coming down to talk to us and know how to talk to us. And then we just
But I think to your point, when someone cares and has a passion about what they're doing, that kind of inspires, reignites the passion that they got. They got in it to be a director.
Sure.
Right? They got in it because they're artistic and they want to want to watch. And a lot of these guys did plays and live TV and they love acting.
Yeah, the excitement.
The excitement of it, you know. So I think that's great. Because
which sometimes, like in anything, you can lose some of that excitement when you've been doing one thing for a long time. You got to trick yourself into finding ways to surprise yourself.
Right.
Not unlike we've talked about with working out. If you stay in the same routine, your body gets too used to it. You got to trick it to shake it up to get the results.
I know. When you do one push-up every month,
my body just
you
gets
have to do two at some point. Or your body's
used
just
to
not going
to
change.
My body gets used to it.
I mean,
shock the system, man.
It's crazy.
Try doing a sit-up next. See what happens.
Oh, that'll be shocking.
Harry Potter can do some sit-ups over here.
People told me sit-ups are bad for me, and I'm okay with that.
Who's people?
I don't know.
Who's they?
The crunches. They're not good for your back or something.
Yeah, right. Not your back. Nothing's good for your back, dude. Walking around upright's not good for your back.
Troublesome.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
So Guiding Light for how long?
Year and a half.
Wow, that's a good run.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where I'd just come out of school. I was so excited. I had these ideas of where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do, what I was capable of, and they wanted to sign me up and have me stay there for a long, long time. And I wouldn't give them, even 3 years. I was giving them 6-month deals over time. And they were being very kind to me, but they don't do that. And
sure.
They were telling me,
and they don't like to do it.
And
it's hard to plan. Yeah.
So I, prematurely, for many years, I thought, jumped ship of my own accord and packed up and left New York and left the job, left all my friends and went to L.A. And I'd never even been to California before, ever in my life. So just to start all over. And then, the rude awakening of, the next curtain being pulled back. And it's like, here's what it's like to struggle and be force-fed the humble pie.
Where did you,
until you choke.
We talk about a lot of things on the show, but self-motivation.
Yeah.
It's interesting, man, because you find actors who – we're always kind of wanting, you did a great job. We're wanting acceptance and some
affirmation.
Affirmation, yes, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't go along with someone who picks up, quits a job, packs their bags, and goes to a place they've never been to try something they've never done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just interesting when we talk, because we've talked to a lot of actors, obviously, but it's interesting when you look at those personality types, those two personality types don't go together.
Yeah.
Like you're not looking for affirmation and have low self-esteem and all these things and be a pioneer of, hey, I'm packing up. Forget this paying job. I'm out.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting thing. Yeah. That was kind of a side note. But
yeah.
No, it's very true.
We talk about you and I, Wes, about personal growth a lot. So it's just interesting to look at that type because we all want affirmation or acceptance. Yeah. But then you're willing to just sacrifice everything for the love of what you do.
When you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I certainly did at that time. And I was also told, hey, take your risks when you're young because this is when you can afford to get away with it. Like, get out there
the
when you're
young. The best advice you can ever, that might have been top three smartest things we've heard on this podcast. Honestly, because you can attest to this.
Yes.
Bradford, and I can. And listen, we've both been successful in our own rights, and in perception is we're very successful, and we have been very blessed and fortunate and lucky to do what we're doing and have great families.
Sure.
But you don't want to live with regrets.
Yeah.
You want it. Young, you can recover up until you're 35.
Yeah.
And you're young. You're whatever.
Ish.
But, as a kid, you don't want to kind of sometimes take those chances. And whoever told you that, that's awesome. Because it's like you really want to take those chances.
Yeah, definitely words to live by.
Yeah, for sure.
Until it's too late.
Until that time has passed.
Until you take it a dirt nap. Yeah. He was a nice man.
So
never took a chance.
Yeah. How did you find L.A.? How did L.A. treat you?
Good. I found...
Where'd you live first?
I moved around. I had never moved before. In that first year, I moved 5 times, so it was hard to get settled. It was crazy. And once I did get settled, I was fortunate to shoot my first movie and have a great experience doing that. An indie film that is called Latter Days, and it actually has, you know, gone on to be, you know, a bit of a little iconic indie film over the years. And really proud of the work. And that was my first experience of what it was like to make a film and to work on something in that medium that I was really proud of. And when you see the writing, the potential in the writing, and actually have it come to fruition, it's something that stays with you. I was working with, you know, Jacqueline Bisset in that movie, and she had done so many films, and she reminded me, don't take this for granted, because this isn't like most movies and experiences. So I felt, you know, fortunate to have that in the beginning, and a short-lived sitcom, which was wild to shoot in front of a live studio audience. It was fun and exciting, and I wish it had lasted longer on Fox. And then it became time to settle into, oh, this is what it is like to get really close on some big jobs and lose out.
Yeah.
To have a lot of time go by when you're not, you're not busy on set, and you're trying to figure out how to keep your head on straight, and you're trying to figure out what to do with what little savings you have left, and how to manage the long-term game, and realize it's got to be a marathon and not a sprint. And there were some lean years there, but I had some friends and a supportive family that were always there for me, reminding me to believe in myself. And then
it's awesome.
You know, and then you find some jobs along the way that keep you really motivated and remind you, hey, not only is this the right thing for you to be doing, but you're good at it, and you still enjoy it as much as you always have, if not more, when you have that opportunity to get back out there and do it. So, you know, cut to all these years later, honestly, 20, to be able to come back to daytime, it's such a full circle. Like, really, to me, it feels almost like the most spiritual part of my journey that I've ever come to understand has been this last year, when I was given a chance at my age to go back to where it began for me, and to do something, to commit to something that I had once turned my back on, and say, now you have a chance to know what it would be like if you put everything you have into it.
Yeah.
How good can you be in this medium? Yeah. You know, so this opportunity for me, I wake up every day like pinching myself, saying, knowing how grateful I am, saying, this is not a dream, this is real, keep going.
Nice,
that's
man.
Awesome. Yeah, second chances are cool.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Because I got a second chance too.
Right. That's right. We were talking about that.
I came out of the river. Heinrich pulled me out of the river. Thank you, Heinrich.
Oh, that's
Thank
right.
you very much well, for bringing me back to General Hospital. You should get the credit. I've been giving Frank the credit.
Did I pull you out?
I should give Heinrich the credit.
One of my minions?
One of your henchmen.
I think Faison had the guys ready as soon as you shot me to pull me out, and then he handed me off to you to
dispose of.
For you to finish me.
Yes.
And then you said, I can't. Yeah. His eyes are so pretty.
Right.
That he has to stay alive.
Yeah.
So.
And one day when I want revenge on my father, I will take the collar off you and sick you loose on him, and you will go after him, and I will somehow marionette my way through that crazy. That's the way I see it. I feel like at that time I was planning.
Oh, planning.
Planning.
That. Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know why I was planning it for so long. 5 years is a long time to plan.
Because I was on Young and the Restless.
Right.
Foiled.
With a mustache, too. I saw a clip.
Oh, yeah. I had a goatee. It was goatee. Amazing.
Yeah, that's a really... Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
Where do you think I got my inspiration?
Dude, it was awesome because I had to... First of all, this is the funny story.
How much shoe polish did they put in it to darken it so it wasn't gray?
I did. First of all, it wasn't gray.
It was the Keith... Hernandez box? Was it the Keith Hernandez box in the Just for Men?
Treading on thin ice today.
Say goodbye to your audience. Say goodbye to your fans. So they were like, you know, I was going undercover on YNR.
It was, it was dangerous.
It was actually cool, dude. It was my exit story. And I was supposed to be from somewhere on the East Coast. So
somewhere where they all have goatees?
New York or Jersey, right? So Jay Bontatibus, who passed away, our friend, who's an actor, he passed away of cancer. Love the guy. But he was, I don't even know if he's from New Jersey. He's from Boston. He's from somewhere over there, right?
Great
and
name.
He's Italian.
Yeah.
And, you know, he always had the chains and the rings and the goatee. And so I actually modeled this after him.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, so I'm like, this is this guy. And But I know, because my accents are so bad anyway, that I know, like, for the first day I nailed it. I know it. But then you do something like 3 weeks later,
right?
And then I don't know what I did the first time.
How to match
so,
it.
Sure. So I know it was some Jersey or New York Goomba something, but it was funny to do something different because people didn't recognize me. I had the goatee, and it was just fun to do. So Heinrich pulled me out of the river.
Yay, Heinrich!
Yay! But it was fun. But it's great to be back, and we got to work together, and we don't really get to work together much anymore.
Not now, but hopefully we will, I hope.
And they kind of dropped the ball a little bit with the whole – because I was, you know, working with Anna a lot when we were tracking you down because we figured out you wrote the severed branch, I guess. Somehow – you figured it out.
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, great.
So
make yourself comfortable.
The jackal strikes again.
Look, make yourself comfortable. Stretch out on my couch.
Yeah.
Like the freaking...
You want me to feed you some grapes?
Look at this guy.
I was fan you.
This is like every roommate I ever had.
I was hunched...
Hey, I'm going to work, guys. We'll be right here, Steve.
I was hunched over. My back was hurting. I was hunched over, and I don't even want my back to hurt.
Oh, that's the day that you, like... pulled another disc or something?
Yeah, I don't want to mess with that.
You need to stop deadlifting so heavy.
No, that's the day.
Help you with the form.
You found the email.
Oh my gosh, that's right. The day that we were that's exactly right. The day that we decoded your hidden messages in the severed branch.
We hacked your email or we finally got into
it. I had thrown my back out so bad that I was like I was crooked.
Oh, my God.
And so I was sitting at the desk like Larry King, and it was Kelly and Steve.
Totally, dude.
Were there, and it was like
you have scoliosis or
something?
Yeah. Oh, dude.
For
him to move, they had to not give him a cross because they were going to show his cross from the door to the desk.
Yeah.
And it took so long
that
we had 17 commercial breaks
from
when from the door to the desk.
Right.
And I grew a beard.
Yeah.
Because he was so messed up.
Yeah.
And we were trying not to laugh. But
it was pretty sad.
You know, he likes to bust my chops that I'm the old guy.
Yeah.
And he should have had a walker.
Yeah.
Wow. And we've told this story, I think, in the pod before, but I walk in here. Steve's in here. And he's like, dude, what's wrong with you? And I just take my shirt off because I wanted him to see how crooked I was. And it was like, I don't know, it felt like an 80s movie where I was like coming on to you a little bit.
He's like, dude, look at this. I go, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
So he takes his shirt off and his right shoulder is 2 feet below his left. And I threw open my mouth and I chewed it.
Hilarious.
But anyway, so we found that you were the guy with severed
branch. Yeah,
he
figured that out.
Day, whatever.
So,
but anyway, I kind of missed the Anna or Finola and I were working together so much. Who I love her.
Yeah, she's great,
amazing. And and then it kind of fell off.
Yeah.
And then someone kidnapped her, and
nobody
knew. And
right.
And then he's tied up in the log cabin.
Yeah, but she's had a little time off. That affects our ability to have a story.
Sure, of course.
Her,
yeah, she took some time off.
Yeah.
Which she did. She was
sure.
She's got kids, and
they were working
the heck out of her.
Yeah,
and she's never complains. Never, ever.
Is Peter still hanging around Maxie?
Oh, here comes the questions.
Yes, that would be an affirmative.
You are,
Wait a minute.
Yes, and which I think is a good thing. I think there's
for who.
Well, I think there's a lot of room for redemption for a
character. Oh, so you're using her for redemption is what you're saying.
Well, you know, if you want to get technical about it, Peter's entire life, he has wanted to know what it was like to have a real family.
I want to know what
love
is.
Some kind of family.
Well, right.
He wants to know what love is. He wants her to show him. Stupid.
Sing it. Cool. But I don't think he knows that you guys were together.
Do you, Wes? Yes, Wes knows.
So you were
Spinelli and Maxie. Yes,
you were
have
answering
a backstory.
As Peter.
Yes.
Okay.
Peter does not.
Oh, he's slipped into character.
If you're going to slip from Peter to Wes, you should let everybody,
or at least speak in the third person, the first person.
Okay. So Wes knows that Maxie and Spinelli.
Yes.
Were almost
a
super couple.
Yes.
Almost. Perilously close to becoming a
super couple. You guys were close. You guys are awesome. So you're delivering babies.
Yeah.
On the side of the road.
Right.
And did that forge a connection? I know you and Maxie kind of had a connection before.
Yes, but and then telling you, and then telling Spinelli about it on the phone.
Oh, wait, I was there in those
moment,
scenes too.
Yes.
Remember, he called you right after email.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh, who's the old guy with no memory? Who's the old guy?
Oh, and then I raced off. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And then I wouldn't say raced. That wouldn't be the word.
Yeah, hobbled.
And then I raced to the docks, and then you were at the docks, and then we had all those
scenes. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So have you guys?
Has she gotten over the fact that you kind of like were responsible for her husband's death? Has she kind of got over that?
You know, I don't know when this podcast is going to air, but we have been able to shoot a lot of really great scenes lately that are about letting go of the past and being able to heal and move forward.
Letting go of Spinelli
and
healing and moving forward
and
without Spinelli.
Yeah, and maybe letting go of some of the Heinrich mistakes and some of the pain of the...
some of the Spinelli mistakes.
Yes, because yes.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
We have a kid.
So, I certainly have never said... I certainly know...
We have a kid.
Peter has never said Spinelli is a mistake. He's never said that.
I have to bust his chops. But did you guys... Have you guys kissed yet?
We have not kissed yet.
Okay. Ooh, you have a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Because trust me.
When this guy starts kissing on a chick,
I'm in trouble.
With the hair and the blowing hair. You make fun of my long hair when I took the speedboat to Spoon Island.
Yep.
This guy, the hair.
Do you have a speedboat?
And the golden light and the kiss.
Does Peter have a speedboat?
Peter can have anything he wants. He's got a lot of money.
Where does Peter get his money?
Heinrich.
Well,
Faison. Yes.
The WSB froze all Heinrich's accounts and took all of his money.
Right.
So Peter was left penniless after he was released from PCPD and WSB custody.
It's a lot of letters.
Yes. And then he went to see JPS. And actually, you know, the character Valentin owed him big time for the whole childhood. Valentin taking Peter from the adoptive family, Heinrich from the adoptive family, and putting him with Faison, and that's how that tied in. Yes, how Peter ended up spending his life with his abusive father was because Valentin took him from the good home as an infant where he was supposed to have been adopted after Anna dropped him off and moved him to Faison to hurt Anna and to have control and leverage over
Anna.
Man,
we just sounded like minions right there. Like,
so that...
Ooh!
So
because
that
that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Long-standing, painfully deep mistake to have made. It gives Anna and Peter both a real issue with Valentin.
Did you get to punch
Valentin?
So
did he give you money or something? Is that where this was?
When Peter went to see him and said, you owe me big time, he insisted that some of the Cassadine money be used to front Peter's new business by buying the Invader tabloid in Port Charles so that Peter could reinvent himself and have his own career and have his own ability to try and start over and have a new life for himself. So he did take the money from Valentin to start over after all of his money was taken from. After all the Faison's money was taken from.
So you worked at Aurora. You didn't own it.
I did not. Drew hired me to be the COO.
Oh, yes. I think that was my money. You're welcome.
Yes. Chief Operating Officer.
Oh,
right.
Yeah,
your
money. Yeah,
like,
sorry.
Yes.
I probably gave it to him. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Now, was that money,
I love
was
this
that
guy
money earned
listen,
honestly?
Sure was. Coffee.
Coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Okay,
absolutely.
There we go.
Absolutely. Coffee Importers.
Coffee and Corpses. That's the name of their coffee shop.
Coffee and Corpses.
And there's another word in there. Not loyal friends. While the other friend might be gone on a trip somewhere or in Russia. And this guy just, you know, didn't care and gave my money away and everybody.
He looked so much like you.
I got so confused. I know, it's so funny.
God, that guy looks like, here's his money.
Yeah. Forget the show. I don't want to talk about the show. Let's talk about Laura Wright.
Oh, right.
We should probably mention her.
Why talk about on-screen love interest when we can go for the real thing?
Well, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, why not?
Right.
I mean, good gosh. So you guys met when you came back or before you came back to daytime?
We originally met in New York all those years ago, 15, 16 years ago. You know, and I was, I mean, I was smitten, but I couldn't, you know, hit on her. She would ask me to run lines in the green room, and I would try to make sure she didn't catch me staring at her, but I was in awe of her. I just also knew she was married and having her beautiful children and had an awesome life, and I was just sort of wanting to find a way to work with her, but our storylines never worked together on the show. So I was like, well, you know, we could be friends, but I was never on the show long enough to really become friends. But we used to run lines and laugh together in the green room. So cut to 15, 16 years later, we're at an Emmy party and we run into each other. And it was like we were two little kids that just, you know, we're on the playground like, hey, and having fun. And we have been inseparable ever since. It was the moment she told me I was like, what do you mean you're single? Please give me your number. I want to take you to dinner.
Please.
Yes, please.
Yes.
And she's like, what? No way. She thought I was teasing her. I'm like, no, I'm totally serious.
That's awesome.
Who would tease Laura Wright?
Well, because I'm afraid I'd get hurt.
Right.
Well, that's Carly would hurt you.
Yes.
Laura wouldn't really hurt you the same way.
That's true.
She's sweet.
She's so sweet.
Not as sweet as Carly.
Yeah.
I mean, Carly's not as sweet as Laura.
Yeah, that's true.
You know.
That's true.
That's awesome.
That's great, man.
What a cool, how things have lined up to be here, to be in a great relationship where, I mean, gosh, you probably see each other a lot.
Yeah. We do. We live together now.
But you don't work. You're not necessarily working.
We've never had a scene. We've had one little scene. The moment the shooting with Faison and Nathan was happening up in Crimson, that was a moment we crossed paths in the Metro Court lobby.
Right.
And the only scene, I think the writers were throwing that for the fans, a little interaction. But we've never, our characters never crossed paths.
That's actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when you're working together, that is a whole different thing.
Totally.
You know?
Well, you know, we do work together. I actually, is it the 26th today? It is.
It is.
Yeah. So exactly 1 year ago, right now, she was helping me. This is months after we ran into each other at the party and started seeing each other. And I'd gone off to do a movie in my hometown, actually, and came back to L.A. And we had sort of manifested together the idea of, can you imagine how fun it would be if one day, you know, we were working together, and she was like, you should come on my show. You're so good. And you need to come back to dates. I was like, oh, well, all right, I'm open to the idea of it.
Sure, yeah.
Well, in September, I was invited to produce a session to meet Frank and read for Frank. But I had screen tested for Frank in New York in 2009.
Oh, for One Life?
So for One Life to Live.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize then, I never knew that he wanted very much to work with me then and wanted to cast me in the role and didn't. And the show was basically on its last leg. And he basically, his take was, I didn't want to do that to you in that way then. I didn't know that years had gone by and he had never forgotten about me or wanted to, I just didn't know that. And I was thrilled to read for him and see him here and have that shot. And then a week later when the screen test rolled around, that was actually September 27th. So that's a year ago tomorrow that I screen tested here and came inside the hallway for the very first time.
Wow.
And Laura had helped me prepare for my screen test for a week leading up to that and really helped me dial it in so I would give the best audition of my life, which I think I did. And
Something right.
Yeah, and it was fun. I got to work with Roger Howarth and Finola. Finola and Roger Howarth.
Oh, cool.
And it was great. And it went so well. And and it was awesome to have Laura as a scene partner.
Oh,
to
yeah, dude.
Help me
Absolutely.
Dust off the cobwebs and really swing for the fences.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
And then we got we ended up manifesting, our wish came true. And now we can carpool to work fun.
It is nice to have someone that you can, that obviously gets your, understands your life and your hours. That's a big deal, right?
Yes.
But but not only that, to be able to work on stuff and not just understand it, but understand it completely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, like reading lines with, you know, even if you're friends with other actors, when they're reading a General Hospital script, if they're working on your lines with you, I mean, who's going to know it better than Laura Wright?
Exactly. Who understands the medium and, she was a great scene partner to help me get ready for that. Because, I mean, you know, I don't know if people think that because if they think that because Laura and I are together that I can just get a job, a contract. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Yeah, no.
It does not work that way.
Yeah. I mean, I had screen tests. There were 10 other guys screen testing for that role. And they were comparable. I mean, competitive and
– comparable and good looks, you meant.
Yes. Yes.
Comparable, but my hair was better.
Yeah, well, I had a good hair day that day. I will admit to that.
Do you have bad hair days? Getting back to my initial question, do you look at it? And
not
be like,
anymore. Not
it's
that
a
I'm
out of place.
Not anymore. Now that I'm back in daytime, my hair actually is never looks
never
looks
unkempt.
Never looks true.
My hair's never looked better. Thank you.
Yeah. It's another one of the great perks of being back in daytime is I get to wake up with perfect hair every day.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people with perfect hair.
Oh, we have a question now? I don't know what this is. This is,
well,
is this
usually
a tweet?
It's usually the tweet of the week.
Oh, now you're messing with
me. But this is a question. And
does that mean we're wrapping up?
Thankfully, Wes has agreed to stay for this part of the podcast. So I didn't feel like we need
to. We have so much more to talk about, by the way.
Yeah. And we're going to have a barbecue afterwards, too.
Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
We're going to spend all day together.
So, but speaking about hairdos and appeal and men in daytime. This person, Nikki, wants to know, does Steve really get Jason's appeal? Because sometimes he makes comments about Jason's personality that makes it seem like he doesn't. So do you really know how great you are? How I read that question. Do you really know how great you are?
I have to answer this for him.
That's what I think. I feel like.
All right, Wes is leaving now. No. Yeah.
Do you get Jason's appeal?
Well, this is a guy who didn't probably ever know who Jason really was, right?
Yeah.
How much about General Hospital did you watch 15 years ago?
Laura helped me with the research once it became very serious. You know, the idea of me potentially being here. I needed to understand what was what.
Okay.
Yeah, and obviously she filled me in. Because at the beginning, before I ever even was asked, would you be interested in going back to daytime? And, you know, because I thought, well, if the time's right and the role's right, we'll see. But no one was calling about an audition, and she was coming home from work so happy every day because she was like, you don't understand. This guy Stevie B's coming back. It's amazing. Oh, no. And I was like, oh, wow, this sounds so exciting. I'm so happy you're happy with work right now. And I didn't understand the ins and outs of what that really meant for the show. Now, of course, I'm like, oh, that's epic.
Epic.
Epic, yes.
And there's just a lot of appeal.
Well, look, dude.
Jason's appeal and Stevie B's appeal.
We joke about our characters, right?
Well, you have to.
I mean, I have to joke about myself.
Yeah, and if you don't, I'm happy to help.
You are happy to help, and that's why you were my best friend. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, it's Robo Jason, or he's a robot, or he's got no personality.
The Borg.
Now, the Borg, those things could have been kind of funny and true prior to me coming back this time.
Yeah.
Because this time I actually have a personality, I feel, which is probably way out of character.
Thanks to Heinrich.
Yes. That's why I blame Heinrich.
Yeah.
He gave me personality juice.
One of the many things injected during the 5 years.
Yes. Yeah, so I cry a lot. And I have fun, and I smile probably more than Jason has ever smiled in a year. I've been here a year too.
Yeah,
I watched Steve take some pictures today, and he had this. He just had this really good looking smile.
No,
on his
that's
face.
Not what you said.
I said goofy. Look at him with that goofy smile.
He goes, because I've never smiled, so he's like, look at that goofy smile.
Yeah.
I said, look at that freaking goofy guy that I'm going to punch right after the photo shoot. But it's true. I don't know, man. Look, dude, it's you got to make fun of yourself.
Well, that's the thing.
And I did have really, you know, one look. And I you know, when I started the character over, I was supposed to not have emotion. And it took a while to get emotion again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
all part of the healing process, by the way.
It was all part of the healing and learning process. So,
well, who
but
knows?
I have fun now. I have probably have too much fun at work, and I shouldn't have this much fun.
Who knows how many expressions you were having underneath that mask?
A lot.
You could have just
dude, underneath my one look, I am a heck of an actor.
Yeah, when you get the. Yeah.
I have a lot of looks under my one look. Internally, I'm amazing. It's amazing, dude.
I think part of what's very difficult to do and to do well, and part of what I think you're exceptionally good at, is everything that you are able to deliver and give behind your eyes in the storytelling, the things that you...
Did you almost start crying there?
He did. Because he's staring right at me, and we had a moment.
Yeah.
And again, you showed your jealousy
by interrupting
a moment that Wes and I had. You know, sometimes you need to learn not to be on this podcast. Because Wes and I both have glorious hair, beautiful eyes, and we are connecting as two men.
Yes. Aww.
And it can be emotional.
Thank you, Wes. You'll be back.
Right.
It'll be Wes and Steve, the Wes and Steve podcast.
You'll be introduced
and
as the new
maybe
co-host
we'll
next
have
week.
Bradford Anderson on.
I'll be the first
in
guest.
About a year.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
For sure. Well, but man, I know we could talk forever because we can. But thank you so much for just I'm glad it finally worked.
Yeah,
because we've tried a few times to get you here.
I know.
And we say this all the time, but people always, send us like, have this person on the podcast, have this person on the podcast.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times they don't realize that we don't, like, you guys don't all line up outside the door. Right. And we're like, all right, your turn. It's you today.
No, but it was really nice of you guys to contact my agent and set this up.
Your agent, Laura?
You're right, my agent, Laura Wright. Yeah.
Dude, this guy.
Laura's World.
So
hashtag.
Because in the building, there's dressing rooms that don't get reception.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So you come down for like, you bless us here now.
Sometimes.
And you bless your friend who has a podcast with you.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Steve, I'm coming down. I'm getting new glasses. And we have a podcast to do. And I have 3-hour window.
Yep.
Get who you can.
Yep.
And those are the messages I get. I'm like, listen, bitch.
Yeah.
You don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Get your jackal ass down here.
Yeah.
And you're gonna sit on the couch.
Yeah. Set up shop.
So I'm texting. I'm like looking at the sheet. I'm like, oh man, Wes. I'm texting him. Nothing. He's in a room that doesn't get service.
Yeah. Oh,
so
man.
Of course that
no
I'm
idea.
Texting Laura. He's like, she goes, I just Snapchatted him. I WhatsApped him.
Yeah.
I've done all these things.
I foursquared him.
I MySpaced him. Yep. I got him.
And
he can't do it. Yeah. And I was like, come on, man.
That's amazing.
It was great because we had Max Gale.
That's right.
Oh, cool.
We had Max.
Very cool.
And then, so today,
so
we're doing
so
this
great.
Big photo shoot here, right? And then Max comes up to me. And I don't know if you've seen the car he drives. He drives a very big van.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like,
vintage.
Sure.
Like a VW bus?
No.
No.
It's like an A-team van,
but
it's not the A-team.
Oh, wow.
So it's the van down by the river.
Right.
And our spaces aren't conducive to bigger cars here.
Yes. Yeah.
So he came up to me today and he goes, I got to talk to you for a second. I'm like, what's up, man? He goes, I dented your door.
Oh, no.
I'm like, what do you mean, dude?
Yeah.
He's like, he goes, you didn't notice? I said, no, I didn't notice. He goes, I couldn't get really out, so I had to give it a little shove, and it dented your door. I'm like, come on, man.
Come on,
what do I got to do now? Go get a body shop? This is crazy talk.
Yeah.
So I was like, can you have this guy park?
And then he told you he was joking?
No.
No.
No, he told me it's true, and I haven't seen it yet. I got to go out and look at my car.
Man.
I'm like, can you have this guy park somewhere away from me?
Right.
In the van lot.
Somewhere, because it's not the first time he's been like so razor close. I'll go, this guy is not getting out of this car.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he didn't without making mine a can opener.
But doesn't he have like a bunch of doors in the van that he could have got out of?
He could have got, he had many escape routes. The moonroof, sunroof, back doors. But anyway, Wes, thanks for your time,
thank
man.
Thank you so much,
of course,
man.
Guys.
Who's the question? Nikki?
That was
Nikki.
Nikki,
thank you.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
I just want to say one more
thing
about Wes because, people really don't know. He's kind of going on the road a little bit and doing some appearances, but just a really hardworking, really nice, really humble guy, and he's just a pleasure to have here at work.
Agreed.
Because we need people with, positive energy and just...
It's like any workplace, right?
Who want to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You come to work, you're happy. He's happy to be here, happy to see people, and it's just a pleasure, man.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
All right,
and I love your hair.
It's true. I mean, I wouldn't have talked about it so much if I didn't love
it. That's true. He's jealous.
So we'll talk about your secrets after.
Thank you, guys.
All right, man. Thanks, Wes.
All right. Bye.